In chapter 3, in our last class, we were looking at, well, we'll start with verse 1. It says, therefore, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above, where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God. So this idea of, because of the connection that we have with Him, we're supposed to live in a certain manner. If we back up just a little bit in the second chapter, at the end of that, in verse 19, it said, holding fast to the head, from whom the whole entire body, being supplied and held together by the joints and ligaments, grows with the growth which is from God. And then the idea, if you have died with Christ to the elementary principles of the world, why, as if you were living in the world, do you submit yourself to decrees such as, and then goes on to some of these ideas that were outside influences that they would run into, such as do not handle, do not taste, do not touch, which all refers to things destined to perish with use, in accordance with the commandments and teachings of men. So we see these things that are being introduced are teachings of men. And then 23 says, these are matters which have, to be sure, the appearance of wisdom in self-made religion. So these things can appear to be wise. So some of the outside influences that we might run into can appear to be wise. But it said that this is self-made religion and self-abasement and severe treatment of the body, but are of no value against fleshly indulgence. And then that's when it goes into where we just looked at in chapter 3, verse 1. Therefore, or because of this, if you have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above. So, when we think about our life, the things, you know, it says if we have been raised up with Christ, keep seeking the things above. Isn't that some of the things when it goes into when we were looking at the different characteristics of our life, as far as things that we should not do and things that we should put on? These are different things that's new characteristics in our life, and it has to do with because of the life that we've chose to be a part of, because of this being in Christ. And in verse 5 it says, therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to, and then it goes over some of these characteristics, which I'm not going to go into detail on the characteristics. We've already looked at that. We've already discussed that, how we see this in different areas. A lot of the times it might be words that build upon one another for a specific characteristic and thought at that time. But we understand that all of these things, because a lot of the times are referenced as these things, they're put as things that we don't have any business being a part of, because these things are things that are sin. And then verse 6 even says, for it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And then we see the idea that these are things that that we once walked in when you were living in them. So maybe not necessarily these characteristics might not be something that was specifically part of our life, but there was some type of characteristics that were part of our life that we had to do away with. We see the idea of once walked, living in them, so we see again this idea of their way of life. It's the way that they conduct their life. But now, you also put them all aside. And then it gives some other things that we are to put aside. And then we see there to put on the new self, who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him. One thing I wanted to touch on, because this came up in our last class, I'm not going to go into much detail, but as far as, because I think one characteristic really tells us on about some of the idea that we're looking at here. When the idea of, I'm trying to remember what the exact question was, basically where the comment of people being motivated to baptism because of the fear of hell. And that's a legitimate motivation. there's nothing wrong with being motivated by that. But I think maybe some of the question was the idea of, you know, what all that their mindset was after that point. I think maybe possibly just baptism alone, was that kind of what the point was? So being baptized, and, you know, because I think you brought up, is that just like getting wet? And did you have a comment? Oh, okay. Arthritis? So that's a good comment, and there was good comments around that as far as it has to do with not just the baptism itself, because of course baptism is essential, but it's going to be about our way of thinking. Are we, you know, I guess a better word is commitment. You know, have we decided to follow Jesus? If we are we willing to, you know, put these things away? Because, you know, that's one of the things that we have to do. Because that's the whole idea of repentance. That's your change of will. You know, you've got to decide that, you know, look, I know I used to live this way, but I can't do that anymore. I've got to live this way. Now, of course, at that time, you're not going to know what everything is. Again, that's where we said that studying comes to play, as far as there might be some things you didn't realize you were doing wrong. Well, when you come to that, then that's when you need to, you know what the answer is. You know, you've got to put those things away. But one thing I thought of, let's look over at... Yeah, let's look over at 1 Peter. 1 Peter 4. Because I know one of the things that was said, or an example, was a lot of the times because of these younger people. You know, you see them, they decide to get baptized, and maybe they don't understand what all that encompasses. I think that was part of some of the question. But one thing I wanted to make clear, because I know when we talked about this the other day, the idea came up was, you know, someone had been baptized, and then they, you know, realize some of these things. Maybe we shouldn't be doing certain things. In 1 Peter 4, well, let's just start off. The main verse I want to look at is 3, but let's start off at the first verse, because we'll see some of these similar ideas. It says, "Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God." So we see this idea that our life is going to have to be for pleasing God and not pleasing others. And verse 3, "For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. Reason why I picked that verse is because, and I believe I've heard it used in a sense that there is a time that, and I'm not agreeing with what I heard, okay? I want to state that first. But to the extent that there is a time where these things were okay. Because this verse starts off for the time already passed. Some people might take that to mean that there's a certain time while you're young before you you get all that out of your system and then you obey Christ and stuff. I don't think that's what it's talking about. It's talking about the reality that these people were already a part of this. This was already part of their life. It's not agreeing with this, but it says, this is a fact. Yes, you were part of this. Do away with it. The time is sufficient. What you already had with it, no more. You know, this idea of change in our life. So I hope I didn't go too far off track there. I was just, because we're seeing some of these ideas of how we're supposed to be living, the idea of Christ being our head and different things like that. So that's going to, it's important how we live, because we are expected to live in a certain way with a certain attitude. Are there any thoughts or questions, comments, or no? Okay. So I think we were around verse 17. Does that sound about right? In chapter 3 of Colossians?
We discussed that a little bit.
Okay. I couldn't remember if we had did that or not. Okay, so we did. So whatever you do in word and deed. So this idea of whatever we do, maybe... Indeed, it talks about, it includes our speech, but also it could be our actions or whatever. So whatever it is that we do in the name of the Lord Jesus. So then, a kind of, in verse 18, we see some of these ideas that, again, we saw in Ephesians. Now, this doesn't go into as much detail on these as it did in Ephesians. But verses 18 through 22 briefly mention some relationships and how one is to handle these relationships. And I asked the question, or put space on there to list the relationship and how we're to handle this relationship. What it tells us about this relationship. So verse 18 was talking about wives, right? And what does it say to the wife?
Submit as is fitting to the Lord.
Okay. So be subject to your husband and as is fitting to the Lord. And then verse 19, it says, husbands, what are they to do?
Love your wives, be gentle with them.
Okay, so we're to love our wives, be gentle with them. Some verses say, do not be embittered against them. Verse 20, talking about the children. We know that they are to be obedient. It says to be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Verse 21 is speaking to fathers. Says, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Mr. Crane, what does your verse?
Does it say do not nag? Okay, okay. So it still has a negative. Okay.
It says, fathers, do not nag your children. If you are too hard to please, they might want to stop trying.
Okay, okay. So same idea. I'm just trying to see if it used a kind of a negative sense. We'll see why in a minute. In verse 22, it's talking to the slaves. It says, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. So we see here that this slave, although this might not be an easy task. Well, when we think about any of these relationships, this might not be an easy task. But it's not saying that it's going to be. And it really doesn't say that it has to be. It's saying if this is what you are in this relationship, this is you do. So slaves in all things obey those who are your masters. And it says that they are to do this with sincerity. In verses, I put the comment here, verses 18, 20, and 22. When we're looking at these verses, it explains something to us. And number one, of course, it explains why we should do these things. And what reasons do they give for us to do these things in connection to God? So what I was talking about here is not the actual what we're to do itself, but why? What comment is made about when we do this? If a wife is in subjection to her husband, or a child is obedient to its parent, what is it saying in verse 18?
Fitting the Lord.
Okay, so it's fitting. So this is pleasing to the Lord. Fitting to the Lord. And then if you skip a verse, you see that a similar idea in verse 20. It says, children, be obedient to your parents. And why is this? Okay, so it pleases the Lord. Then we're going to skip a verse. And in verse 22, it talks to the slave. It says, you know, in all things, obey those who are your masters. And the idea of fearing the Lord. And I thought it was interesting as I was reading that, because in these five verses, you have these three that are talking about the reasoning behind you do this. And it says positive things. Things because it pleases the Lord. Now, we realize that these other things, we do those for the same very reason, but that's not the explanation that is in the verse. So when you look at verses 19 and verses 21, we see that they're different. So you don't see an actual connection to the Lord, not in the way that it was used in the other verses. And the things that it said were, I wrote down the wrong verse, were kind of in a negative sense. Verse 19, show your love for your wife by not being embittered against them, basically. Okay, it says love your wives and do not be embittered against them. In verse 21, you don't exasperate your children. And the reason being is so they don't lose heart. So I just found that interesting, the way that these verses were set up and how it kind of, the pattern that it had there. Any comments or anything? Yes, sir, Rocky.
No, we saw the same thing in Ephesians. Talks about relationships. To me, there's a real important lesson for us We don't know when the Colossian church was established. And let's assume that it was established around the time that the Ephesian church was. That was right around 54 A.D. Paul's writing this letter from prison, 62 A.D. So maybe 8 years, 6 to 8 years later. And why would an apostle of Jesus Christ have to write to Christians about this relationship? Do you think that's the last thing? Do you think the Christians would be the best husbands and wives, the children, slaves, and men? But he writes them with both words. And so I think the lesson there for us is we might look at that and say, well, we're fine in all our relationships. But these churches have been around a long time.
Yeah.
And he had to emphasize it. And these duties that he's talking about don't grow out because of the Christian, but
right.
Because of the relationship.
Because of the relationship.
But because they're in a relationship with Christ, he's amplifying it. So it's okay, you have the
yes.
relationship because of who you are. And now because you're Christians, you do it even more because yes. it's just fitting for the Lord. So I think the lesson for us, at least the lesson to me that I see here, is that maybe because we think we're Christian, we take for granted that we're the best husbands and wives. I think the lesson here, we might take it. We need to be looking at our relationships and working on them, not saying, well, just because we're Christians, that we kind of all worked out and do the best we can. You know, and he's writing these two different letters,
yeah.
and he didn't even know the church here. He hears it from, Ephesus. And, so I find that kind of important.
That's a good point.
It's not assuming that we're the perfect people in these relationships.
I think we realize that. I mean, we should realize that. Yeah, that's a very good point. Because, I mean, even coming up soon, we're going to have a whole class over the family relationship. You know, so different things like that. This is stuff that we can all fail at. That's a good point, Rocky. Just because we're a Christian, we shouldn't think that we're above any of that. And unfortunately, there's people that are going to take on that attitude. But we're going to, that's why it's very important that we, in all of this stuff, we examine ourselves and we be honest with ourselves and truly look to God's Word so we can better ourselves. Because really that's what growth is. I mean, you know, being better at as you go. Did you have a comment? Yes, ma'am.
I find it interesting, two things. If you put the verses together about the husband-wife relationship, especially over in 1 Peter where it talks about wives being submissive to their husbands, and as we learned in Ephesians, it was respectfully to submit, and here it's talking about your behavior. It's not being in control of what the husband is doing, but how you respond to even this man who is an unbeliever and may not
right.
be treating you right.
Right.
But then down below that, he talks about living with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, meaning not to crush her, you know, and over in
something
Ephesians.
Precious.
Yes, and over in Ephesians, it was talking about, nourishing and, what's the other term? Nourish and cherish.
Nourish and cherish.
Yes, her. And as if it were her own body.
Right.
And so, you know, we see that. I also find it interesting there in Colossians, you know, you have just been talking about putting aside like anger and all these kinds
mm-hmm.
of things. The minute that stressful times or disagreements come up, whether between parents or children or husband and wife, we get angry, we might say things that we don't need to say, we may say hurtful things, we may be harsh,
mm-hmm.
And wives may submit, but they are not they won't respectfully submit. And so, you know, and then here comes the tug, you know, of war. And people who have been Christians for 25 years can fall into that. Yeah.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so it's because it's interesting. When it tells us, you know, wives, you do this, husbands, you do this, and it's doesn't have, there's no if clause. It has nothing to do with if the other party is doing what they're supposed to be doing. It's still, you still have the duty as that person of that relationship to handle that in that way. Good comments.
And it does take practice. You know, sometimes let the old ways sneak in. But if you practice and if you really are working on it, or step back and get away from the situation if you have that opportunity, and then approach it in a better frame of mind.
Right.
It'll be better.
All right. Any other thoughts or comments? Or all righty, then verse 22, I think we pretty much covered that. It talks about the slave relationship, but it also explains the importance of doing this, that the slave is to obey his master with sincerity of heart. And the end of the verse tells us this. And I put on there, what else does this verse explain? And I think we pretty much covered all that, that we're to truly obey from the heart and wanting to please the Lord. But we realize this is things that can, although we're not really a slave and master, but, you know, work relationship is similarities there, and so we see how that could play a part as well.
You know, it could even carry over. I've always thought this was just talking about the slaves and everything, but whatever you find your hand to do, whatever the work it is to sit before you,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be serving the brethren or one another in the family, children doing chores, you know, it's yes, you know, you do it because of the authority, but you try to instill the fact that they are, if they're doing what's right, they're actually serving the Lord in doing it.
And you do your best at it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. These are slaves that have become Christians, right?
Well,
but these are, I guess.
Yeah.
I think it is, because I'll tell you, it says, in all the work you are doing, work the best you can. Work as if you were doing it for the Lord. Now,
yes.
Somebody that wasn't Christian, I don't know that he would be
right.
Not for people. Remember that you will receive the reward from the Lord, which you promised to this people. You're serving the Lord Christ, but remember that anyone who does wrong will be punished for that wrong, and the Lord treats everyone the same.
Right. So I do believe that it is talking to slaves that are Christians, but the same point Rocky already brought up, that it has to do with that relationship itself, and this being a Christian heightens, you know, how we should treat these things. So,
I'd want to be a Christian.
You'd want your master to be a Christian.
When I look at this, I read this verse 23 as, you know, we see slave master relationship, and I look at 23 as employee employer relationship, mm-hmm. as a separate relationship and not necessarily continuation of the slave, but as a separate, like you got husbands and wives, children mm-hmm. and parents, fathers and children, slaves and masters, employee, employer, and then further down, masters, creature, slaves, the opposite, masters, creature, slaves. So I don't know, maybe I was thinking that was a separate piece, like employer, employee.
Which part are you?
Whatever you do, work heartily for the Lord and not for me. So in your work, and I took that as a separate.
Oh, part. Did you take that work as actual employment work?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that that's. I mean, you might have a point there. I didn't think of that work being necessarily meaning that. I think just what you do. You know, your actions, the ways you do things, regardless if it's the husband, the wife, the children, the father, the things that you do in connection with that. I could be wrong. That's how I thought of it, but any other thoughts or comments? Or no? Okay.
Right.
Yes, sir.
And what comment? sometimes when we read the New Testament, we read slave and master. And I think many times we have a misconception of what slave and master was during previous times. When we think of slave and master, we always, because of what happened in this country, think about the blacks and the mistreatment and all that. Back in those days, a person who needed to work would work for his family, and this family would take care of him. And they would, it's almost like an employee, you don't have a contractor.
Okay.
They would take care of him, provide housing and food, and they'd be called a slave, but not a slave like we normally think of the blacks. They were just, a worker.
Right.
And the master who paid wages and provided home with the master. So when we think of that, slave and master, we should, I think, incomparable of employee, employer.
Okay.
The same thing, but we always think of mistreatment and ill will.
Right.
And we think about this country.
Just because of
like that.
Okay.
Stay well understanding.
Okay. Good comment. Any other thoughts or comments? Or
I found it interesting that Onesimus and Philemon are members of the Colossian church.
Mm-hmm.
And one's a slave and one's a slave owner.
Right,
master.
One's a master, yeah. Yeah. That would be a good, well, the point Rocky said, well, you would think that would be the master you want, but as long as we're, have the right attitude, the way that we're doing things.
And yet Paul thought it necessary to write a letter to Philemon to get him, and he really, writes in very wisely.
Right, and the way he chooses his words, where
Philemon to get on the same track as Paul. To do right, and to treat Onesimus right.
It gives him the opportunity to, but it gives him the opportunity to somewhat volunteer.
It's our stroke without, mm-hmm. 30 minutes.
So verse 23 and 24 build up on 22. Like we just looked at, whatever you do, do your work heartily, as for the Lord rather than men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve. We're going to hit verse 1 of chapter 4. The reason why I want to do that, because number one, we have time. But really, it's verse 1 is a continuation, I think, of chapter 3. Yes, sir, do you have a comment? Sure. Chapter, verse 1?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
Says, masters, give what is good and fair to your slave. Remember that you have a master in heaven.
Okay. So, do what is fair, is that what it says?
Masters, give what is good and fair.
Oh, good and fair.
Okay. Remember that you have a master in heaven.
Okay. So it's same idea. This one, I'm reading the New American Standard.
That's what I'm probably reading.
And
New King James says, give your bond servants what is just and fair. Knowing that you have also have a master in heaven.
Okay. So we see this idea. It says, masters, grant to your slave justice and fairness. Same idea.
All basically the same idea.
Yes.
Worded in a different way.
Yes, sir. And then they all, it's real clear that, they're to do this because they too have a master. So it says that, this version, to grant justice and fairness, and reasoning being is because they too, or it says you too, or they too, have a master in heaven. So no matter how great we are or whatever position we have in this life, no matter what our title is, we too have someone greater
that we answer to. And I think that's some of the point there. So that's kind of the message to the master. And I think it's a good lesson for us as well. And it goes back to some of the very things that chapter 3 ended with, the things we just looked at. We handle these relationships in these certain ways because, like we looked at in verse 18, it's fitting. It's fitting to the Lord. Well, pleasing to the Lord, verse 20. Out of a fearing the Lord, verse 22.
Look over here. The master in heaven, I know it doesn't say mercy, you know, here for just and fairly, but the Lord is our master in heaven. Yes, sometimes just is called for being fair, always do the job. But he gives us mercy, and sometimes as parents or if we have people working for us, or we need to be forgiving, we need to be merciful. You know, people have bad days, people make mistakes, not be harsh, you know, that kind of thing. And the Lord always commanded and did what was good for us. He did it in Deuteronomy 10, 13. What the Lord commanded Israel was for their good. And the same is for us. Whatever the Lord has us to do is for our good.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that should be the way we should look at anyone who is under
our command. Okay. I had a thought here, but I wrote down my verse wrong, or left part of it out. The idea, what I was wanting to look at for a second, in Matthew, and I'm trying to remember exactly where it's at. So if you know, please help. The idea where it talks about how the slave treated his fellow slave. After he had been treated very fairly, or more than fairly, by his master. But I wrote down the verse wrong. Let me look back here in my recordings real quick.
Is it Matthew 18?
I think that's why I put Matthew 18, but I didn't...
25.
Oh, that's why I was looking at the wrong end of the verses there.
Matthew 23,
yes sir. Yeah, that's a good place to start. Matthew 18:23. For this reason the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. When he had begun to settle them, one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him. But since he did not have the means to repay, his Lord commanded him to be sold, along with his wife and children, and all that he had, and repayment to be made. So the slave fell to the ground and prostrated himself before him, saying, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you everything." And the Lord of that slave felt compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. But the slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. Let's stop there for a second. So this slave, he was in a pretty good predicament there, wasn't he? He owed more than he was going to be able to pay. And first, the master was going to, you know, sell him and his family. But then when he asked, you know, for the forgiveness, it said that, verse 27, that the Lord of that slave felt compassion and released him. and forgave him his debt. So that's pretty great, isn't it, there, that his master would be willing to do that.
Like something God might be, hasn't
it? Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Because it compared to the kingdom of heaven. Yes, sir.
To give you an idea how great that debt was, mm-hmm. this is 10,000 talents. Mm-hmm. Note said one talent was 20 years wages for an acre.
So there was no way he was going to pay it. So he was, that slave owner or master was very, very kind, wasn't he? But even though this slave owner was compassionate, there's a point to this where he kind of changes his mind. And it has to do with because of the attitude of this very slave that was given this to be free of his debt. You know, this thing that he was not capable of getting out of on his own. But he's free from it. At this point. It said, verse 28, but the slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. And he seized him and began to choke him, saying, pay back what you owe. So his fellow slave fell to the ground and began to plead with him, saying, have patience with me, and I will repay you. Does that sound familiar? But he was unwilling and went and threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed. So we see there some of his attitude, that this slave that had been forgiven, the attitude that he took on, and we'll pick up there in our next class. Thank you all for your comments and helping me find my verse.